I used to say that in Montana, I thought the perfect town, and there's a couple of them still left, is where you could find a real working cowboy. I mean, a guy that rides a horse every day, moves cows. There's not a lot of those big areas left, right? But if you could find a town that had real working cowboys in it, and you could find a cappuccino, that was always the best town, because the town's growing just enough to have a coffee shop, but it hasn't turned over where there's Starbucks in town.
Welcome to the Top Broker Podcast, where we have on top producing real estate brokers from around the country and learn what separates them from the rest. I'm your host, Phil Wells. Today we have on Jim Toth from Western Ranch Brokers. Let's get right into it. Jim Toth of Western Ranch Brokers is a top producing agent in the Bozeman, Montana area. He's the number two ranked broker in the entire state with over $130 million of sales in 2021. He's also the top ranked Christie's agent in all of Montana. Jim focuses on ranch land, selling ranches that have sometimes been in the same family's hands for generations. Prior to his career in real estate, he worked in agribusiness for Monsanto throughout Western Montana and then started his own fly fishing company. I'm thrilled to have him on the Top Broker Podcast. Jim, welcome to the show.
What's up, Phil? Appreciate it.
Of course. So it's quite the background that you have, and I'd love to really just hear you tell us your background in as much detail as you can, from how you came to Montana. I know you came from the Midwest. Talk us through a little bit the agribusiness, and we'll see where we go from there.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's been an interesting course to get where we got. As you mentioned, I did come from the Midwest originally. I was born in Indiana and raised in the St. Louis, Missouri area. Pretty much a suburbanite kid, but always had a big love for the outdoors. Between my dad and I, fishing a lot and hiking, time in Boy Scouts, just different. In that time of in the early 70s when there was a big boom to the outdoor industry and people were finding the woods. I just knew I wanted to come out west eventually. Even though I was more of a suburban kid, I was drawn to things that how things grow. I mean, I loved being in the woods. I loved being around farms and ranches. I really admired the people who worked the land, whether they were farmers, ranchers, loggers, whatever. That being connected to the land was a real draw for me. So when I went into college at the University of Missouri in Columbia, that drew me into agriculture. And I was something I really didn't know about, but I knew I liked that subject matter and I liked the culture of it. And yeah, I did 4 years at Mizzou and then actually went to work for Monsanto, which was an agricultural chemical company, still is. And luckily, luck of the draw, I got Western Montana as my territory, which was awesome. I mean, I always thought I wanted to go to them and live in or near the mountains. And so did that in about 1981, moved out to Montana, worked for the ag side of things for about 5 years and lived on a little place on Rock Creek, which is a blue ribbon trout stream, just east of Missoula, Montana, and fell in love with the whole fishing thing. And at some point, Monsanto asked me, did I fish more that year or sell more? And I had to say probably fish. So I quit that and got a wild hair and decided to start a fly fishing shop. We started the shop about 3 or 4 years before the movie A River Runs Through It came out, which of course was about that Missoula area. And just perfect timing, and the movie really boomed our business and got to meet a lot of great folks who were coming out, a lot of high net worth people who were traveling from, at that time, mainly California, Seattle, Colorado, that kind of market. They came up to fish for 2 or 3 days or a week. I guided. I ended up running a shop. I got a second shop, a lodge. We got to be a pretty big deal back in the sort of 1990s. Met my wife then, who also had a big draw to the outdoors, had a couple kids, and at some point decided I got tired of answering all the questions from my guided clients at the end of the week of, hey, do you know any real estate agents around here? And literally, one of my clients decided we were going to do a sort of a hunting and fishing club together. So I sold my shop out and jumped in with both feet to the real estate market. We bought a couple ranches and we're going to do a shared ranch development. I would do the agricultural and the outfitting part. He would take care of the real estate development. I would also help in the sales and marketing. And it was called the Silverboat Club. It was on the Big Hole in the Beaverhead Rivers. So again, I was still connected to the land from an agricultural standpoint. I still had the recreational component, and now I was getting my baptism by fire into real estate. And of course, we did all this right before 9/11. So we took a huge bath on that and learned my lessons the hard way, and then ended up working for because I had this sort of development, marketing, outdoor experience, and went to work for the Yellowstone Club, which is a private ski area up at Big Sky, Montana, out near Bozeman. Did a couple years marketing with them, and then joined a ranch brokerage firm that specialized at the time in fishing and hunting ranches. And then after a few years there, I took off on my own and started my own group called Western Ranch Brokers. We are still currently affiliated with Pure West Christie's. So we have a high-end residential component, as well as we have the authentic, ranch business, not just hunting and fishing, but production, cattle ranches and farms and everything that goes with that. So it's been a, what I'm doing now is a culmination of the last 42 years of my career, and I really couldn't be happier.
So I imagine when you drive through Montana, you must know, who owns this, who owns this, like because of your experience both, on in the agribusiness side and then with, with running the fly fishing company. And I feel like you must have such an extensive network that you took to real estate. Talk me through how big of an advantage you think that is.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't plan it, but it definitely worked out to be this perfect combination. I got to see the people who, in my ag side, I got to see the people who own the land, work the land, been there multiple generations, understood what it really took to live that life. It's not just a hobby for these, or their business is their business, and it's not an easy business. I really, really grew to admire agricultural people. But then at the same time, there was a stream that flowed through their ranch or whatever. It happened to be full of trout. I learned the wow, there's a big recreational component to this place besides how many cattle they can raise. And then, when and because of the outfitting side, I got to see the value of the recreational component to this land. And I gotta tell you, I've been in Montana 42 years, and I still every day wake up just enamored by the place. I think I bring that. Still being wowed by seeing a place in Montana like I was 40 years ago. I help people as they're coming to Montana, and they got that same sense of discovery and enjoyment and not knowing exactly how to get here or be here. And I think I sort of, for lack of a better word, guide them, outfit them into their experience in buying their own piece of Montana, whether it's from a cattle production standpoint, whether it's from a cabin in the woods, whether it's from a big trophy home on the outskirts of town. I still get what the people just coming to Montana are still looking for, and I like every day that I haven't gotten jaded about that. And so yeah, I can still bring the excitement of a new younger agent, but I've got yeah I've seen the same ranch go from a cattle ranch to a recreational ranch to a development piece of property in the 40 years I've known it. I've worked the same piece of land in three different industries at time. And so yeah, it's pretty interesting just to see that. And as a buddy of mine says, who owns a bank in Billings, he says, Montana's just one long main street. Yeah, there's a million people in the town, but we're or in the state, but we're a huge state. And yet, somebody in Billings in eastern Montana, somebody in the Flathead Lake area, somebody went kids went to school at Montana State, but they from a farm up in the Highline, and all those things are like 7 hours apart from each other. But Montana is sort of like just one big main street. And even though a lot of change is coming, there's still a real sense of small townness to Montana, except for the real super developed centers like Bozeman.
I really like your website and all the videos that you have for the properties, and it's very authentic and it's very, you have a style, and I'll definitely in the show notes I'm going to link to a couple of the videos that I watched. I mean a lot of drone footage. Who do you use for, do you have an in-house person that you use for all of that, or is that Christie's who helps out with that, or?
My only creative outlet my whole life is creating marketing stuff for our ranches. I mean, I don't paint, I don't, write, I don't whatever. I really love to put together marketing. And it did come, I had about a year stint working for an advertising agency before I got into real estate. So I love good photography, I love good layouts, I love telling the story through photography or through the drone work or whatever. And And a lot of the big companies like Christie's and all that, they have a real set way to do their marketing, which works really, really well for the residential market in particular, or the resort market in particular. But the ranch thing is really, really unique. I mean, it's a completely different animal. And even though we're associated with Christie's, we needed a look that for our team that would be competitive with the other independent ranch brokers. And there's maybe half a dozen really good ones in Montana. And we're the guys fighting for the big listings. And that is a pretty competitive world. It's, you know, we're always trying to one up each other on you know, production and videos. We know what our clientele is looking for and the experience they want to have. And so we don't really fit well into a commoditized kind of marketing program. You know, every ranch, it's just because every ranch is different. You know, a lot of homes could be very similar to the next home, but no ranch is like another ranch. Even if they're right next door to each other, they're going to be different. And they have different history. And we try to tell the backstory and the history of a place because people love the authenticity and transparency of what a ranch brings to it. So we try to portray that. And honestly, we just couldn't do it on our own. So we basically put our own marketing team together. You know, we have a three person team right now that handles, we have multiple photographers and drone pilots, but we have one main marketing coordinator. We have a head of social media. We have an overall sort of creative director, and then we all have the input. We all know what we like, and so we throw it together, and we have a team meeting every week that we address what, you know, like we just got done doing our listing presentation because we've had to upgrade it and sort of talk about some additional items. And also we like to change our lookup to keep it creative. So yeah, like I said, I sort of micromanage the crap out of that one, so which I'm guilty of, but I do like it, and I think it does get some pretty positive attention. So I think it's
It's
worth it.
very impressive, and it's impressive in a way that I don't know. You almost wouldn't ex you wouldn't expect it because it feels like you've established, like, video has become big in the last couple of years. I've found more and more emphasis on video, and most agents seem like they have. But it seems like you were really ahead of the game with it. Like, you've been doing it for some time. You have it really locked in. It just feels like you have a whole professional studio behind it. So it's very good.
Well, we fooled somebody else then, because I wish we did. And I said I'd like the process a lot, and I do believe it's about telling a story. You know, I mean, I'm sure homes are the same way. There's probably stories behind every home, but a ranch has a sense of arrival when you get there, and then you go through the various parts of the ranch and how you show it. You know, it's like writing a play or a movie. There's a way you want to lay out and unveil certain things at the ranch at various times during a showing. And our single hardest thing is getting people physically here. I mean, you know, everybody's busy schedules and travel and weather and school and whatever. So we almost have to replicate that showing experience in the video, you know, and that's why we have so much emphasis on the drone work. Because aerial, we used to do it with maps and photos. And now the drone thing allows us to essentially fly through a ranch showing. And I've actually shown a ranch with a drone before. I had a guy sitting, and we were wired in, and
No
he,
way.
I don't remember, I think he was in LA, and we actually flew the ranch with a drone, and we narrated the showing while he was sitting in his
That's
office.
cool.
You know, he still ended up having to come up and get boots on the ground. He still got to get boots on the ground, and people still got to, but that we really turned the tide of this is what he was looking for when we did that.
Wow, that's really cool. Did you sell him something? All
We did. We
right.
ended up selling that place. So So, but it is interesting that our we have and we our process our selling process is a lot longer. You know, it takes us a good 2 years to sell a
Wow.
ranch if you're going to push the market and you know get it out there. Between people like to see it when it's green and when it's white and with it's with grass and when with snow. And so you know, it takes us a full selling season at the minimum to get a place, you know, listed, marketing materials produced, get the word out, get people inquiring, schedule showings, get a deal put together, an offer on the table, do due diligence. You know, that's almost a 12-month process on the fastest deals. Maybe 6 to 9 months on the fastest deals. You know, and it can be as much as a 2 year or three. I've had listings, weirdly not to brag about, but I've had some 3 and 4 year listings. It took us that long to get the place sold, whether it was price or some other issue or whatever. But yeah, you do end up having these long-term relationships with these landowners as you go through this.
Looking at your listings, they often have really great names. Just looking at a few Snowshoe Creek Homestead, The Retreat on 8 Mile Creek, Coulter's Run Ranch. How often are those existing names, and how often are you, you know, maybe it doesn't have, you know, doesn't have a name, so you come up with, you know, a name, or, you know, how often are you involved in that, and how often is it just an existing? It's what the owners have always called it.
That's a good question. So ranches in Montana, I'm probably most people are aware, they always have a brand for the cattle. So if it's a really production cattle ranch, it'll generally be what that brand is, like the, you know, the Arbar N or something like that, which we just sold. It happened to be the people's names, Rob and Robert and Nancy, right? Arbar N. So we just call it the Arbar N Ranch, you know, because people would know that. Those are notable names, you know, that, or some other big ranch, like, you know, it'll tend to be the name that's been historically connected to it. So why mess with it? You know, it's a good notable name to people in the ranch industry. Other times, though, you're selling maybe a part of a ranch or some other thing, and maybe it's called, you know, whatever. And you're like, we need to be a little more descriptive. And so with that, you'll see a lot of ranches and a lot of ranch brokers will use the basic analogy of tell them, you know, where you are, who you are, and what you do. You know, Rock Creek Cattle Company. I mean, that sort of tells you you're on Rock Creek, you raise cattle, and it's a ranch, right? Or something like that. Well, so we do make up some of that stuff, you know, depending if it doesn't have a notable name, and we want to quickly catch people's eye, like what's important. If it's on a river, that's really important. So the river name better be in the name of the ranch. Or if it's a hunting, if it's more of a cabin up in the woods, more of a retreat kind of feel to it, then we'll use that. And so, yeah, we do probably, I'd say probably more, about 50% of the time we name these places ourselves. The other 50%, we're using the existing name or the brand, depending which is more notable.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And can we talk a little bit about how the heck you value? Like, how do you comp out? I mean, you mentioned that no two ranches are alike. How do you even begin to appropriately price ranch land?
Well, that's a great question. And actually, we just had our big annual ranch broker and appraiser meeting where we powwow once a year to, it's like all the old, you know, trappers coming into the rendezvous once a year. We all circle back and we sort of share ideas. Montana is sort of interesting in the fact it's a non-disclosure state. So meaning that if you buy a ranch, the title does not reflect what you paid on it. And Montana is one of the few states in the country that has, so you don't know what things sold for. You know, you rely heavily on other brokers who did the transactions or appraisers will tell you, but publicly it's just not a known number. So that makes it a little hard. You can't just go to a comp list and say, okay, there's three other ranches that sold in the same valley and they all had similar things, at least to get a general idea, let's do that. You can, but that's not easy to gather information. So we go over that first. The other thing would be cattle ranches in particular used to sell based on their productivity. In other words, like if you had a ranch that was what they call 500 head operation, I mean, there's 500 mother cows on that ranch and they, you know, have a calf every year. And then there was a cash flow, how much income would that generate? Well, unfortunately we've blown way past ranches ever quote penciling. I think right now the break-even point for cattle ranches might be $8,000 per animal unit per cow. So if in theory, if you had a 500 head operation at $8,000, it's $4 million. But that there's no 500 head cattle operation that wouldn't be selling for more like $10 million right now. You know, so there's the sort of almost the commercial appraisal kind of what income method you might use is blown out of the water completely now. It used to be when I started, it was still a vital part of it. But they've all gone way beyond what they could possibly generate. As a matter of fact, most returns, actual rates of return on any cattle ranch are 1% at best, maybe even less. So that valuation idea has gone out the deal. So that takes us back to the comps, what is sold and what do you know and who sold what, and some were on market, some were off market. There's a lot more off market transactions these days. So you really have to be in a pretty tight network of brokers to know what's going on. And I think we're a pretty good self-policing fraternity of brokers where I share with you and you share with me, even though we're competitors, because at some point I'm going to help you and you're going to help me back some point. So working with a good established ranch broker will really help you get access to those kind of properties that you may not ever see on the open market. But getting back to the valuation question, Yeah, we all try to quantify it down. Like, okay, what does it mean when it has a river on it? What if it means it has small trout in the river versus big trout in the river? And what happens if there's elk on the property? And are they on the property during hunting season? All those kind of things really change your valuation. So at the end of the day, you take a whole bunch of those kind of scenarios and ultimately just make your best estimate you can, and then add about 20% on top of that, because that's the market's growing
Sure.
fast enough right now to do that. So, yeah, long answer to a short question, but it's not real
No,
simple.
I
It
think
isn't right now.
we could probably spend the whole time talking about the intricacies of, what brings it up by, 10% elevation, like you said, water rights and all that. It just seems like there's a lot that,
Right.
yeah, if you were to take a similar, say you were to take a similar sized, what's a typical size ranch for you?
That's a great question. Gosh, we've sold everything from, small acreage recreational properties up to, tens of thousands of acres. But I'd say the average place we would sell was, it used to be that $5 to $10 million ranch was about the average ranch we sold. And that would probably be in that sort of, 2,500 to 5,000 acre kind of a size. Is generally, it depends what you're trying to. If you're trying to make a workable ranch, a real ranch you really raise cows on, then it'd have to be that size or bigger to actually do it. But if it's more of just a rural living kind of retreat kind of a property, yeah, it can be a lot lower. But it's actually valued a lot by the I always say how green it is, meaning, a ranch, a property in eastern Montana, which is way, way drier than Western Montana, that's going to be a lot lower price per acre. And so you're going to need more acres to raise cows anyway. And as you get more rainfall or river frontage or irrigation, the grass can, you can grow more grass. It's more productive. That also drives value. Irrigated ground, higher rainfall areas, riverfront, adjacency to public land like Forest Service, BLM, or state-owned land. All those are things that can really, really vary your pricing and value for the property.
Okay. And for us, a funny comparison would be for us, if you're on the east side, the properties that are west, close to Central Park, those are more valuable. And as you get further to the east, like far east, it's less valuable. And on the west side, similar. You want to be as close to the park as you can. So I could kind of see,
And that's a perfect example. I'm sure every industry has maybe the beach, and if you're in Florida or something, but yeah, everything has a draw like that, and it is still location, 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 right? Whether it's a ranch or a New York place or a house in the Midwest, it still has to do with a lot of that for sure. The one thing we have that determines a lot of our value is also adjacency to a commercial airport. There's just not a lot of airports in Montana, right? And once you land someplace, how far is the drive from when you land till you get your car and then you start driving? Everybody wants to be within that magical 1 hour of a commercial airport. That's about the comfortable commuting time, right? And of course, for all those prices within that hour of a commercial airport, the prices have gone up dramatically. When you get 2 hours, now people say, well, okay, I can go an hour and a half out, or I can go 2 hours out. As we do, we measure things in Montana by hours, not miles. So if you go, 2 hours out, okay, that means I'm not going to go to Costco, every day, but I get more seclusion. So that proximity to commercial air is a big deal. And honestly, more with the more private jet services there's becoming, there are a number of private jet capable private strips around that actually some were old Air Force bases in Montana. Like the town of Lewistown is over 2 hours to a commercial airport, but it has a beautiful big, airstrip in it. And so it's actually grown on the super high end where people could fly private into it, but it hasn't really boomed on somebody who flies commercial, because it's a long, long drive to get there from a commercial airport. So that the accessibility is a big deal, and it's a lot driven by the access to the
Yeah, I could
airports.
definitely see that. And yeah, like you said, not just the airport, but yeah, a Costco or a, medical or, hospitals, things like that. It could be a big
Yeah.
deal. Yeah.
I used to say that in Montana, I thought the perfect town, and there's a couple of them still left, is where you could find a real working cowboy. I mean, a guy that rides a horse every day, moves cows. There's not a lot of those big areas left, right? But if you could find a town that had real working cowboys in it, and you could find a cappuccino, that was always the best town, because the town's growing just enough to have a coffee shop, but it hasn't turned over where there's Starbucks in town, So we all joke about it. I joke about the cappuccino and the cowboy in the same place. Yeah, and there's a few of them. A few of them got overrun already by the cappuccino guys, but there's still a lot of real cowboys and real Montana out there.
So that would also probably be the best place to invest in, right? If you're looking to.
I don't think so. Everybody complains about Bozeman and how much it's growing and all that. My partner Caleb always says, "That dang Bozeman, it'll just ruin you, because you do go out to some place that's really far-fetched, and the diner's closed and there's nothing to eat, and you're miles from getting a part for a piece of equipment or something like that." So he says, "Yeah, we all complain about Bozeman, but it's really nice to have that many services available, or Billings or Missoula or Kalispell or something like that." But yeah, so that perfect, I'm sure you guys have in your own version. What's the perfect? You want to be close enough to a place, but far enough away not to be impacted negatively by it. And there's a few towns around still like that.
Yeah, one that's like that is the subway. Like you want to be very close to the subway, but if you're right on top of a station, your building can actually shake a little bit. So, it's kind of funny. It's hilarious
Yeah, so
to
we all have our own versions of
yeah,
that kind
it's
of
both
stuff.
pretty funny to compare the two. So when you're saying, I was just running the kind of doing the mental numbers when you were valuing ranches, it's like between maybe 2,000 and 7,000 per acre, something like that. Am I in the right range, or did I lose a zero?
I'd say that no, I think that you're probably close on a ranch that somebody coming from the city would probably like. There are ranches you could buy that are still $1,000 an acre, but they're very, very far out and they're very, very dry, right? So normally people first move here, they don't like it. They need to see some green. So that 2,000, it generally means it's gonna be, it's still a cattle ranch, but it's gonna have it's drier, but it's still gonna have maybe some trees and some elk on it and that kind of thing. You get up to that 7 to 10,000 an acre range, that means okay, there's either a creek nearby or some irrigation or something that can drive that value and be more accessible. What one thing I will say is interesting is when people, and I did the same thing when I first moved here, I wanted to be in the trees. I had a little cabin on Rock Creek, and trees were all around me, and I just felt like, for a Midwestern kid coming out here, that's what I thought Montana was. But it's interesting, as I've been around and I see my clients do this, the longer you're here, the more open space you want to see. Everybody comes, I always say, you everybody wants that security blanket of the trees and the mountains right around you. It gives you comfort. But as you hear longer, you realize what the draw to Montana is the big long views. And you don't have that when you're in a mountain valley, right? And so and then also certain people are drawn to certain areas more. And I'd say as I've gotten older, I like to see more and be open more, have less people around. And so yeah, I think you as I've said, I've had people buy a small plot of densely treed things, and then they say, "Well, let's go buy 1,000 acre of a little hunting ranch, what's more scattered timber, but a little more open and a little more elbow room." Then they say, "Well, hey, I got enough money, I want to buy a cattle ranch now." So then they buy a 5,000 acre, 10,000 acre cattle ranch, and now they like their big open spaces. So it's almost like an acquired taste, the openness. But I see it people moving through that process, including myself in the last 40 years I've been
That's
here.
really interesting. It is striking when you're driving through Montana, just how big the big sky, right? But it really is. I mean, it's and also when you say you measure it in hours, you're going, aren't the speed limits like 80? Like you can really move. It's 85 in some places.
And I'd say it's 80 generally, but and if you have a Montana plate, you can go to about 87. If you have an out-of-state plate, they'll tag you at about 82. So it's but actually, I'll tell you one funny story, if you use it or not. But back when I first moved here, Montana was a 55 mile an hour speed limit, like every place else in the country was in 1980, 81. When I first moved here, so it was always 55. Well, they repealed that. Every state went back to whatever its previous speed limit was. Okay, so whatever is going to 65 in Missouri or whatever. Well, Montana's speed limit before 55 was literally reasonable and prudent. And they figured it's people in Montana knew well enough to don't be an idiot and you're not going to drive fast on icy roads. So the speed limit was reasonable and prudent. So for about a year and a half, 2 years, Montana had that as its speed limit. And this is not that long ago, like in the 90s or something like that. And it was funny, and then everybody thought there was like it was the Autobahn up here or something, but it wasn't, and tickets got given. But yeah, for a while we did not have a speed limit
Wow.
after 55 went away.
Yeah, I mean, I drove cross country a few times, and in one of them, I did it in an old Honda Odyssey 2001 van without air conditioning in the summer. And I was going through Montana,
Wow.
and I was trying to. My goal is always to make it through Montana in one day. I never quite make. Montana's about half the country, I think, when you're driving the whole, trying to make the whole thing. And yeah, it was just pretty funny because I was taking that thing 80 and it was just starting to shake a little bit, and everyone, you really move in Montana.
Oh yeah. There's somebody came up with this smart idea that if you're in the very, very southeast corner of Montana and versus like all the way up into like, up by Sandpoint, up like Libby and all that,
Okay.
if you're in a southeast corner of Montana, you're closer to Texas than you are to the northwest corner of Montana.
Wow.
You could hit the Texas Panhandle sooner than you would it's sooner than you would hit northwest Montana. So it is a big state, and it's got a few it's got some good interstates, but we're also get a ton of weather, and you've got to be, that's the thing about Montana. It's you got to be a little bit self-reliant. You got to be a little bit, do your own thing, support yourself. I mean, there's more and more people around, but they're that's I think the draw to it. It's always just a little bit challenging, whether it's weather, whether it's distances, whether it's availability of stuff. I think those who like to challenge themselves a little bit like Montana. Now, yeah, it's getting more civilized and easier to do stuff around here in the bigger cities, but that's what I've always liked about it, is that you sort of got, yeah, in the wintertime, you better have a sleeping bag and snow boots in the back of the truck in case you go off the road, or in the summertime, you better make sure you got enough gas to get from here to there, because there's not always a gas station on every corner, as you get out in the country. So yeah, so that's what I like about it, and I think that's a lot of people like. There's still a chance to be self-determining in Montana, a little bit. And I think some people are afraid of that and they don't come, and some people are love that challenge and come out and give it a try.
Absolutely. Do you have do you have a certain cadence that you call people or that you send out your are you big on like monthly e-blasts with updates and that kind of thing? What are your touch points with your former clients?
That's a great point. As for the longest time, I felt like I could do it on my own, just my own ability to manage those contacts and stay in touch with new and old clients and all that. And as it just it's this whole market just exploded in the last 5 years, that just became, so many new clients coming in, we didn't want to lose touch. So we with our within our marketing team, we do a pretty good job of having people stay in touch through email blasts, through blogs, through we have a sort of a private back office, so we also offer properties through that aren't offered to everybody. So we get people calling and talking to us. And it's interesting when we don't, they make note of it, and so it's a lot like the fly fishing clients I used to have. Even though they're not fishing, they still like to talk about fishing. And even though they don't not buying a ranch, they still like to know what the ranch market's going like. And so keeping in touch with that. And then actually we're moving to the point where just getting an actual CRM system on board is where we're at right now. And we're sort of in the startup of that, and we're not totally utilizing it yet, but we've got enough volume of business now working. It's beyond our own little black books at this point. So yeah, we're working on the CRM system. But prior to that, we've always had newsletter sign up, we've had email blast sign ups, we have blogs. And then obviously we reach out to people, just with our own personal calls, and do what we're doing right now is, chew the fat for half an hour with people.
No, I think that's the calls can be really because then they mention it too to other people. It
It's
really is. I
everything.
feel like as brokers we're just on the phone all the time. And that's okay. I think right before this
It's
you
true.
were on a call,
It's true.
so I wanted to ask you about, I forgot to ask you earlier, how does financing work? Are these mostly all cash deals, or can you finance up to like half with this sort of property, or how does it work?
That's a great question. The larger the transaction, the more cash it is generally. I mean, I bet you less than 10%, maybe even less than 5% of our transactions are financed. And it's usually the smaller ones. Most buyers we have on a, you know, $10, $20, $30 million transaction, it's a cash offer. Whether they borrow against their own portfolios and then put financing on the transaction after the fact, that's probably what ends up happening. But as far as we know, it's a cash transaction. You know, number one, it's like, and you said earlier, how do you value these places? I wouldn't want to try to get financing on a ranch because every appraiser is going to see it completely differently. So yeah, we're lucky and blessed by that we're not impacted a lot by interest rates and financing situations. We are impacted probably more by what people are doing to buy this. If they're selling something else to buy a ranch, you know, we'll be impacted. Like, for example, if the market in California tanks as far as being able to sell for super high prices, that's going to mean they're going to bring less money to Montana. But right now, these other markets are holding up, at least for now, and have for the last few years, that they can still sell for big dollars down there and bring the big dollars up here. But well, I think the only thing that's really going to slow Montana down is going to be that is what's their home market like and what is their situation like. If those markets slow down, just like in 08, Montana won't crash. It'll just be a sag a little bit. Like, we only went down maybe 20% in pricing in the 08, as long as it wasn't something, you know, grossly overpriced or development based. But the ranch market barely went down, you know, 20%. And then all of a sudden it took about 2 years and everybody decided, well, you know what? I'd rather be in land than the stock market right now. And so that tangible asset thing is a huge driver for people to come here, even when there's a little financial turmoil. Matter of fact, I talked to a number of different high net worth management guys, and they're actually expanding their recommendations of their portfolios to their people to say, yeah, get more into land and ranch, you know, if you're in this kind of marketplace. So yeah, it runs a little counter cyclical to the traditional residential
market. Yeah, and farmland also. I mean, I've definitely been hearing that as people investing. I mean, there's nothing harder than real land, you know, especially with inflation and everything.
Well, and it's funny. It's interesting. To cut it down smaller, there's a huge difference between ranch and farm as far as the kind of buyers. You know, farm buyers are almost more like commercial real estate buyers because farming is all about the return, okay, and appreciation, right? I hate to say, there's just not generally a whole lot of sex appeal about a farm. You know, if a ranch with mountains and trees and elk and trout and all that, way, way bigger kind of wow factor and sizzle, you know. So the buyers for farms are almost always somebody who grew up a farm and they understand that industry. They want to expand. A lot of institutional buyers are buying farms, especially as the food questions come into play. So we get these ebbs and flows on the farm buyer market. But the ranch market has a bit more of that recreational kind of buzz to it. And so it's a different kind of buyer. And typically people don't own a ranch and a farm. They're one or the other culturally. It's just two different personality types we find. But you're right. Whether they run to a ranch or whether they run to a farm ground, it's still a solid investment. Probably the weakest thing we have right now is rural development land. Land that maybe on the outskirts of a town that people were speculating the town would grow to that area. That's probably, if there's a softening in the market right now, it's on that kind of stuff because that's strictly a development play. And it usually takes financing. And with interest rates where they're at, you know, that development buyer is definitely got a little more nervous these days. But I'd say, and I think the rest of this country's this way. The other weird thing is all these negative things, but there's no inventory. You know, the lack of inventory is just insane these days. And with that, we're getting a lot more off market transactions where people don't want to be on the open market. And so there even appears to be less inventory because there's a fair amount of stuff that is for sale, but you don't know about it. So that's where we really try to develop a good relationship with our buyers as well as our sellers, but mainly the buyers, to let them know, hey, we have this as a as an off-market listing. And if you come to us and buy through us, we can let you know about it.
And especially with the non-disclosure aspect, it's interesting, you know, with because you're not even it's not published.
And interesting, there's a lot more deals these days. A lot of the bigger deals are just a regular transactions are covered in non-disclosure agreements these days. So even if we wanted to tell somebody about it, we can't, you know. So the just within the not the state of Montana law, but just the transaction itself wants to be done super private. So even we have publicly traded properties that at the end we can't disclose, we can't even say it sold. We just it just goes off the market. Just that nobody knows what
Wow.
happened. So yeah, there's a lot more. So it's a lot, weirdly, it's a lot, it's, I don't say it's harder. It's back to being what it was. You really had to work. Last few years, it was relatively easy if you had listings, you know. This now, it's you're back to really working for it right now, and you know, and which is good, which will, you know, shake out the, you know, some operators from the other ones as far as brokers go.
Sure. It sounds like it's very critical to work with a good buyer's agent. If you're looking at ranch land, for all these reasons we've discussed.
Well, we like to think so, and I'm sure it's like in your market too. Probably in the sort the residential side, I think there's probably a way you want to be in the know. You know, I don't know what that looks like, but that's our version of it. Yeah, I mean, I would recommend work with somebody who knows enough to have seen the highs and the lows of a market. So from 2008 to now, it's been, you know, 15 years. So somebody who's probably seen another crash, you know, and seen all the booms, would be good to have some perspective on that. So yeah, I'd say somebody with maybe a little bit of a gray beard, I don't know, but somebody with some time and experience in their hands who's actively in the market on a regular basis. You know, somebody who's doing it part time or you know, maybe dip drift. You know, we have a fair amount of residential brokers trying to drift in to sell ranches as well. And you know, sometimes they do okay and sometimes they don't. But I'd say, you know, it's like I'm going to go to the specialist when I have to go to a doctor. You know, if I have a certain condition, I'm going to go to the guy who specializes in that or the woman who specializes in that, and not just to my general practitioner, probably. To, you know, so I think that's the way you got to look at the ranching. It's a unique enough market that has enough personal relationship and information that's off market. You want to get somebody who's in the know for
Absolutely.
sure.
So yeah, if any brokers listening have any referrals for you, or if any any people are thinking maybe for themselves that they are interested in some land in Montana, how would they reach out to you?
We can always contact us directly. Our westernranchbrokers.com is our website. If you want to catch me directly, my email would be just jim@westernranchbrokers.com. Phone number would be 406-539-2550. But you know, the website will get you all that information. Just reach out. We would welcome anybody. If you've got a solid client who's deciding they're done with wherever they live, or they just want to have that second or third or fourth property, we would love to work with you, pay referral fees, have no problem with that. We'd love to try to work with anybody. And yeah, we understand you probably got a strong relationship with your clients like we do, and we'll tag team and handle that person exactly how you want it done.
Sure. Wonderful. I think I had one other question I just wanted to add in. I mean, we sure covered a lot, so I understand if you
You
didn't.
know, I We did cover a lot, and I think, and I guess the last thing I'll say is, I find myself a lot of times being a matchmaker, and meaning like one of the first deals I ever did was a 127-year owned ranch that literally was a homesteaded place, and we sold it to a TV personality, and I'm not going to say who it was, but culturally, you could have more wide range of different personalities. The ranch family had an 80-year-old attorney who, you know, his best days were 20, 30 years ago, and the buyer, the television buyer, was a had nine attorneys, five from New York and four from LA, and oh my gosh, just trying to make those people not make each other mad was my job. So I look at it as more like a matchmaker kind of role. So but so yeah, so be ready for that. A little, you know, you may not understand why somebody wants to do a certain way, you know, on a ranch, on a sale or purchase, but understand that's important to those people if you're buying an old established ranch. And then also just, you know, the due diligence stuff we go through is radically different than anything else you do in a residential transaction, you know, as far as water rights and underlying easements and agricultural easements and hunting leases. And it's a, you know, it's not undoable. We obviously that's what we focus on. So, you know, be prepared to work with an experienced agent, or, you know, we'll pull in the experts you need, like a water rights specialist or an ag-based attorney that can help you with that process. But you'll staff up a little bit if you're going to be purchasing a big ranch, and we can help you
Sure,
with that.
sure. I remembered my wandering question. You were talking a little bit about how a showing, you know, the process of doing a showing, and how it's kind of a you walk someone through, you reveal different, you know, aspects of it, and you kind of curate that experience. Can you talk a little bit about doing a showing for how do you even begin to show a 1500 acre, you know, ranch, and just tell me about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, that's great. And it is a little bit like telling a story, as well as, you know, what do you want them to see first, and what do we want to expand on. And so first of all, I generally say is, how much time do we have? You know, I try, it's going to take a minimum of 2 hours to show a ranch. It can take all day depending on how big the place is. So we'll figure what our time frame is. And we usually have a short showing and a long showing route. But we'll, you know, so ranches are generally sold more on the land than they are on the improvements. I mean, you might have a big, pretty house on it, or it might just have an old homestead on it, but, you know, the improvements are not generally the starting point. You know, how you arrive to the ranch, you know, you pick people up at the airport, you drive them out typically in our pickup or Suburbans we have. Once we get to the ranch, we actually all have 6-seat enclosed side by sides, and they're 4-wheel drive vehicles that can go anywhere on the ranch,
Cool.
but it gives you a more intimate experience than ride around in a pickup. So and they go anywhere. They're like blind mules. They'll go anywhere on the ranch. So we all in summertime they're air conditioned, wintertime they're heated, you know, but we'll go through mud and water and everything with those. So we'll load everybody up into there. We usually pull out at that time a map or a digital map of the ranch, and we start pointing out points. We start, okay, here's, you see that mountain in the distance? That's going to be our one boundary, and we're going to go to this lake over here. And so we'll sort of give them a big picture of, tell them what you're going to see to start with. And then we walk through the process of unveiling the ranch and what the most important parts are. You know, a lot of time, if it's a there's a production component, we sort of go through that first. Here's the cattle, here's the corrals, and here's the loading chutes, and here's this. But then we move into the pasture ground, and then more of the recreational component. If there's an elk area or a trout area, we let people have an experience. You know, like if it's a long showing, we'll stop for lunch at the side of a creek or whatever, and lay out a nice lunch for everyone. Talk a little bit, get to know people, what their take is on the place so far. We'll load back up in the buggies, continue around, and, you know, every property has what we call a broker's point, you know, which is the big site on the property that you get the old and big majestic views. You get to see most of the ranch from one spot. And that time after we circle back, and then we usually take in the amenities, whether it's the house or cabins or whatever's on the property, and gets us back to sort of what that original destination was. We usually start at those buildings, but we don't spend a lot of time in them to there. And so a ranch has a sense of arrival, that just the way they're naturally laid out geographically, there's always a sense of arrival. Homesteaders built their houses in the original barns and in these, you know, locations that made really common sense operating, and they tend to still be the heart and central part of the ranch. So we'll start there, and that may or may not be where you end up building a new home at, but we usually sort of, and then we talk about the history of the ranch, who owned it. You know, it was originally this size, and they added this, they bought that, they bought their brother out, blah, blah, blah. We sort of talk about how the ranch got compiled. And so yeah, that can be a, you know, it can be as short as a 2 hour event. It can be as long as a, you know, all day, 6, 8 hours. But we try to do it where it's comfortable, and we make sure everybody's enjoying the trip and getting all their questions answered. And then we usually catch people up, we get them back to town. If they've got time, we'll take them out to dinner at a local watering hole with a good steak and a whiskey or something like that. And then they spend the night, or they head on back to their to wherever they started their
Wow,
day at.
that sounds like a pretty amazing experience. That's great. Thanks for taking me through that. I feel like you just told a little
No,
story right
yeah.
there. I was
Hey
just
man,
I was right there with you, you know?
I actually I love it. That's the old guiding me coming up. I love laying
I can
out a
see
day
that.
like that and having a great experience. I only took one aptitude test in my whole life, and years and years ago, and it said that I like to help people and I like to have a good time. And so I like to help people have a good time is what I usually do. And if that can help them have that same sense of discovery I did when I first moved to Montana, and every time my eyes lit up when I went over to a new mountain range or so, if I can help people have that experience, that's how I like to show a ranch, is that is through that experience part. Yeah, there's always the nuts and bolts and the numbers part of it and all that too, but let's get you up here and get you out for what you came here for, which is to fall in love with the place.
I think that other agents, could really learn a lot from that. The because we'll often do that where, set up a couple of showings, maybe we get lunch somewhere, call it good, But the idea, take if there's a park nearby, if there's a, try to, it's hard to sometimes get someone for 4 or 5 hours, but if you can, and if they are unfamiliar with the local amenities and neighborhood and everything, I think that, that full service that you just described. I mean, you're talking about picking them up at the airport, taking them there, taking them all through the property for several hours, dinner afterwards. I mean, that sounds, I think we could learn a lot from that. Because people's, it's sort of like visiting a college, When it's a sunny day and someone visits a college, it's like a 20%
Yeah.
chance higher that they're going to go there. I don't know what the exact statistic is, but
Right.
when people visit somewhere on a rainy day or, bad weather, it's much less likely they're going to have that positive memory, and people make decisions, emotionally and based on how they remember it. So yeah.
I try to tell people, I try to say, I want to help you envision what it would be like to live here. Let's do the drive from town. Let's go to where you might go eat. Let's go to the cool places to watch the sunset. And whether it's a house or ranch or whatever, that's what I think is helps a lot. It's just help them envision, because I guarantee if they've never been on a ranch before or owned a ranch before, they don't really know that. So let's give them, they can visualize what it's like, or your neighborhood. What's it like to walk down to some deli at the corner, and where's the right coffee shop, and where do I walk my dog, and give them that. It's nothing about the numbers or anything like that. It all comes to, down to the experience of what it would be like to live there. And if we can be that person that sort of helps them paint that picture for them, they can visualize what it'd be like for them and their family to visit or live there, then I think people have a lot better appreciation for the property. Exactly.
Well, Jim, this has
Exactly.
been so much fun. I would love, the last thing I want to ask you is if I find myself in Montana, can I tag along to one of these showings and can you pack an extra sandwich for me? I would love to come along sometime.
I'd love to see you or any of your clients out here. Would be would love to
Yeah,
tour
that
you
sounds
around.
great. Jim, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Phil. I do appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Top Broker Podcast. If you want to get in touch or suggest a guest for the show, email phil@topbrokerpodcast.com. And if you wouldn't mind doing a rating or a review for the show, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.